Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Yep, yeah, sure.
You reckon?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, another alternative intro. We'll take it. We'll take it.
Yeah.
Quality reference. Okay.
No, what's up, Nikias? Thanks for being here, everyone. YouTube, hide, smash the like button 250 times. Nikias will do a cartwheel and sometime later on in the world. Shout out to Hector Banana Bread. It's time to hoop it up.
I'm so mad that you got to a Hector Banana Bread reference before I could, but salute to you. It is indeed time to hoop it up. Fun weekend of basketball. We've had some marquee matchups since the last time we got to chop it up on the pod. That's been a lot of fun. But today, want to bounce around the league, get a little bit back to our format, some things that have caught our eye, some things that we've enjoyed. Talk about that. We will talk about the All-Star Returns Part 2. We had not a lot of movement, but a little bit of movement, some things to monitor. And then as we continue our award series, we are going to talk about the defensive awards today. And buddy, let me tell you, not an easy exercise to go through. It's like 10 spots for the all defense teams in total. And I'm just like, hey, these are like 28 people that I need to like try to narrow down here and see if we can make a coherent team. We're going to talk about it, though. We will get there a little bit later. But first, let's bounce around.
Hold on. Before we bounce around the lead, let me put it in reverse real quick. Let me back it on up. Just for the dunkers out there, whether you're watching, you're listening, if you're new, Nikias Duncan, Nikias Earl Duncan, is famed for his all defense, the work that he puts in the all defense squad, the teams that he has. Very famously last year, revealed his all defense teams on this podcast. I go to click on an app an hour later, has also revealed his sub list, which is also three different teams with detailed explanations on them. And the funniest part is y'all are going to yell at this man for his all defense team because he left your favorite off. And it's going to be very funny for me to calculate. So I just want to get that disclaimer out there because he spent the last 6 hours today agonizing over this list. And he may probably even change another person by the time we get there. But, you know, they call that in the biz a tease.
That's what I'm talking about. That's good stuff. Yeah, it's just an ungodly amount of, like, naturally you watch and then you get some numbers and you look at some other numbers, you watch a little bit more, you think about the context, etc., of these different defenders, and you build out your list. Like, okay, these are the guys that I've enjoyed on defense. All right, who's been good? Cool. Who's been great? Let's whittle down the list. Okay, who's been great and they also have like some impact numbers to match? Okay, we whittle it down a little bit more. It's just a whole thing. But we'll get there. Steve is like, see? All right. Anyway, funny enough, while we're on defense, hey, Steve, can I give you a little bit of trivia?
Oh, we're doing this again. Fine.
I won't even go full blown trivia. You know what? I'll save you. Guess who has top 10 defense since the beginning? Oh, go
ahead. I'm here. Give it to me.
All right. Fair enough. Since December 27th.
The Detroit Pistons.
No, you know what? We'll just get it out the way. You know, after the floater debacle on the last podcast, you are no longer getting like 16 guesses.
Since
December 1st, the Indiana Pacers have the ninth best defense in the NBA. Since December 27th, or really December 28th, the Pacers are 7-1. That includes this current 6-game win streak that they're on. They are second in defensive rating per cleaning the glass. It sounds funny to start with defense with the Indiana Pacers in light of what they've been the last few years, but the defense has really perked up. And a lot of that is Andrew Nembhard has kind of been everywhere. He has been one of my favorite role players to watch, honestly, since he's been in Indiana and earned himself a big role. Just the drives, the screening for him. Again, the on-ball pressure defensively. We talked a lot about the high pickup points for Indiana and their defense during last postseason. And as he's returned and has just gotten into a flow at this point, Indy has kind of tasked him with defending a little bit of everyone. He has been pesky at the point of attack. He's been able to flash the hands when he's a helper at the nail. He's been aggressive there. He's been tasked with switching on to bigger bodies. He's held up. He's held his own. And I think the combination of that and in general, Indy being more solid with their coverages, they're mixing in more stuff. You'll see Miles Turner in the drop. You'll see him up at the level. You'll see Thomas Bryant in the drop. You'll also see Thomas Bryant at the level, which can I just raise my hand quickly and take, I guess, a lowercase L? We can upgrade it to.
Oh, no, 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 no. If you're about to give me Thomas Bryant praise, this is not a lowercase L, buddy. This is all caps. Probably two or three.
Hey, listen, I have been pleasantly surprised with the Thomas Bryant experience in Indiana. Because when he joined Miami Heat, I was like, hey, the screening, the pops, cool. Especially if he knocks down enough shots. I am terrified of what the defense is going to look like. And during his Miami tenure, the screening was good. Pops up and down in terms of three-point shooting, but he still brought that value against drop or against ice coverage. And the defense mostly worried me during his Miami tenure. He had his good stretches, and you let me know. It was like, hey, here's Thomas Bryant doing his job. I just never felt super comfortable with the Thomas Bryant experience defensively. He's holding up better than I thought in Indiana.
Now, why is that, Nikias? Why is that a thing? So let's talk about this real quick, right?
Okay.
Context is very important. Folks, Thomas Bryant, what he brought to the table for Miami was good until they stopped asking him to do half of what he brought to the table. And so if he can't be at the level because you can't rotate, okay, he's in drop. And if he's only in drop, teams know where to attack. We know this. Mm-hmm. The one thing Thomas Bryant is always going to do, he's going to work hard. And this is an Indiana context that might fit him a little bit better. One, the measure of defense isn't as heavy because we're going to get up and down anyways. So just give it your best. That sounds strange and odd, but that's just kind of how Indiana plays. All you have to do is be solid. Our offense can eventually trap teams into just getting up and down to a track meet with us, as opposed to trying to execute every single time down. And that fits in with what Indiana does. And, you know, he gets to run and screen. So he's probably a little more energized defensively. Mm-hmm. Hand in hand, which is why, you know, folks, we don't have to write players off all the time. We could say it kind of smelled bad, but, you know, you go into the fridge. Sometimes it still tastes good if you warm it up.
How did you tie that together like that?
Best in the world.
You know what? I can't even argue with that. That's fire. But anyway, I have enjoyed the Thomas Bryant experience has been better than I anticipated defensively. And to your point, he's got to do more of what he does. I think the tempo helps him as a pick and roll threat, as a screening and pop threat. On top of that, he's going to continue to crash the offensive glass. That is just a big body that has the nose for that kind of thing. So he's provided positive value with that second unit in Indiana. Him and Obi Toppin just dunking everything is kind of fun. And I just don't think in terms of the pace that Indiana plays with, in addition to their contrasting skill sets offensively, there aren't many backup front courts that can kind of deal with that. When Indy's just playing 100 miles per hour, and now here's this big, strong dude that can also shoot a little bit, and then here's Obi Toppin screening and slipping and cutting, and now we're going to stash him here, and now he's cutting during another drive, and now here's a lob or a dump off for him. It's a lot to deal with. But circling back to the defense, I've enjoyed Andrew Nembhard, and I just think the mix of being more sure of what they're doing coverage-wise and a little bit more audacity with their help. This is something that kind of popped for me during the Miami game that started the 6-game win streak, to where if there's a non-shooter in the corner, Pascal Siakam just roaming all over the place, or whoever is on a non-shooter, we are a little bit more empowered to help at the nail or from the wing. Again, if you're in the weak side corner, we're peeling in super early, and we're also just hitting the roller on top of this. And it's kind of forcing some more difficult passes for offenses to make, and Indiana has done a pretty solid job of flying around after that, running guys off the line. And if Miles Turner's in the game, like, that is still a body you have to contend with at the rim. I've really enjoyed that portion. I don't think a top 10 defense is sustainable for this group. I'll hold the L again if they are. But, like, it certainly felt better. And I think back to the Cleveland game, funny enough. Talking about just be solid, do your job. There was an early possession. Caris LeVert brings the ball up the floor. He kind of runs a pick and roll, but it's really just setting up an Evan Mobley touch. But it's a pick and roll with Evan Mobley. It's Ben Shepherd defending Caris LeVert. Pick and roll, Evan gets out of there. Thomas Bryant was going to creep up to the level, recognizes that Ben Shepherd still has it, so he gets back out. Goes to Evan Mobley. Now it is Evan Mobley getting a screen from Max Strus. We are putting Tyrese Halliburton in action. We also are going to have Thomas Bryant in action. Let's see what happens here. and Tyrese jumps it. Thomas Bryant is active. Evan Mobley has to retreat. Everybody matches back up. Evan Mobley now just has to isolate against Thomas Bryant from the three-point line. Mobley tries to drive left. Ben Shepherd, who's defending Caris LeVert, let me dig down, swipe at the ball, force the pick up for Evan Mobley. Strong contest for Thomas Bryant. Mobley makes the shot anyway, but I saw that and I'm just like, they just got to nail that and make it tough. If they continue to nail this to that degree, it's kind of all you need. Again, top 10 feels rich for me, but in general, we can help. We can do so with a little bit of aggression. We can contest without fouling. And ultimately, if we get the stop, we know what we can do in transition. We know what we can do in early offense, which leads to, hey, Tyrese Haliburton looks more like himself. This feels like a take that both of us have been kind of floating out the last 2-3 weeks when we talked about him. But looks healthier, looks more spry. Steve, as you pointed out during one of our more recent watch parties, driving more, pulled up some of the driving numbers from him earlier today as I was prepping. During the win streak, 67 drives for Tyrese Haliburton, a little over 10 a game. 1.32 points per possession on trips featuring a Tyrese Haliburton drive. I do not need to spend much time explaining how ridiculous of a number that is, complimentary. And it is just high pick and roll. I can just get all the way downhill. It's as simple as when he is off the ball, like Tyrese Haliburton is more than willing to do an early hit ahead to someone, run some action. One of my favorite mini actions that they do, it's a hit ahead to Andrew Nembhard or someone else. Now Tyrese comes off a flare after making that hit ahead, and now he gets to catch the ball on the move. We can go into two-man action. We can tack immediately. And he's done such a good job of getting deep into the paint. Can stop and pop for a floater, can finish at the rim. If you help at all, he has an entire arsenal of ridiculous passes he can get to keep you in rotation. You compound that with what Pascal Siakam has continued to do as an ISO scorer, as a mid-post threat, as a screening partner for Tyrese Haliburton. Again, when Obi Toppin is in, he's going to run hard. He's going to screen. He's going to cut all over the place. Andrew Nembhard can be used as that secondary ball handler. I feel like we've just seen a lot of Tyrese plus another point guard this year. Some of that just to alleviate some of that pressure off of him, particularly early in the year when teams were face guarding him and stuff like that. But now you're starting to feel that be a little bit more impactful when Tyrese feels better. So his touches just bend defenses in a way that put strain on you. Andrew Nembhard is back. He can puncture your defense pretty much whenever he wants to. We know Ben DeMathurin can put his head down. This has been a really fun stretch for the Indiana Pacers. And so I just want to put out a very quick ICU. This is fun stuff.
Well, I mean, I think this is part of just to widen it out. This is why as the season goes on, you want to understand what teams are good at. You want to understand what makes teams really good, what their formula to success is. Understand when maybe they're not achieving it, but what can tighten things up? You know, on one hand, as soon as you said the Indiana Pacers in defense, I wanted to be like, didn't I just watch them get up 142 points to the Boston Celtics not too long ago? Wasn't that the date you started this reference point from, potentially? On the other hand, I go back to when they played Oklahoma City, and I was watching a few of their zone possessions, and I was intrigued because I was like, I like the rotations. It's subtle. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, didn't get stopped every time, but they were able to kind of disrupt and, you know, help out, show and recover and kind of just be real subtle with what they were doing defensively, trying to get OKC out of rhythm. And then I think the more you see it, there's more activity from them defensively. They're more solid defensively. And it's similar to a conversation we had about Sacramento last year. The Kings probably weren't supposed to be as good as they were defensively in the second half, but they gave the effort to be there. And if you're that good of an offensive team, that can elevate your ceiling. All you have to do is be solid. And so they're putting the help in defensively. I think you mentioned the stops leading to easier points for them, obviously. But I also think offensively, that ball is starting to hum even more. I think they're getting to more of a flow. They're making quicker decisions. There's not as much pausing or waiting. They're keeping that pressure on teams. So it's been fun to watch Indiana grow. But I mean, I think that's an overall thing you should probably pay attention to when it comes to these teams. I understand jokes and memes are going to rule the day, but there's some pretty good basketball clubs. They're going to go up and down. Like, did anyone see the Sacramento Kings having this win streak? It's in there somewhere. No. You know what I mean? Like, it's in there. So you just got to understand these teams. So yeah, so salute to Indiana. I will get back to you on whatever you said about Thomas Bryant. I was trying to be kind in the interest of the dunkers, but continue on.
Okay, fair enough. We will circle back. Just a couple more quick hitters from me. Miami Heat currently on a 3-game winning streak. And don't want to dig too deep into the Miami stretch because there is still just a cloud of what happens after this road trip, et cetera.
The cloud of wins.
It is a cloud of wins right now. As I tell you what, they should have an extra one, but you know we won't talk about that. At any rate, just a quick shout out to the young players in Miami, the young front court in particular. Jaime Jaquez Jr., welcome back to making shots, I guess excluding the free throw at the end of, you know, we'll leave that alone. Anyway, Jaime looking more like himself offensively. Like, it's cool to see him knock down timely corner threes. It's been cool to see some of the mid-post work come back to action. Draw a couple of fouls on those. Nikola Jovic has been everywhere. And I mean that in a literal sense, because Miami will move him around the chessboard. Like, there is grab-and-go potential for him. But even within some of the half-court stuff, like, we will just use you as a half-court trigger above the break. Let's get into a split or just simple delay action. I can go to a handoff to either side. They will just run genuine pick and rolls for him. He is someone that can receive some of the pin-ins that we talked about earlier in the year. Miami ramping up their off-ball activity in terms of their screening. Offensively, he could be the beneficiary of that and knock down corner threes on top of that. And because he's as comfortable as he is with the ball in his hands, he can attack some closeouts if they're wild enough. And I'll toss you, I guess, a free throw. Because I've been thinking about this a little bit when watching him. Nikola Jovic is Miami's what? Best passer?
Off the top of my head, 5 or 6, I'd say.
5 or 6. Okay. Because I feel like he's climbing up the list, man.
Where do you have him?
Like, I think he's top 3 on the roster. Just in terms of where he can put what he sees and where he can place the ball.
Give me your top 3.
Like, it's probably Jimmy when he's there. And then I guess it's more like, honestly, I can argue him as high as 2. I think you do just have the hodgepodge of like Bam is there, especially in terms of just the volume pass that he has to make. Like, Bam's going to be there. Hero's grown as a playmaker. But I think Jovic is right in that group.
This is 1,000% Kevin Love. Kevin
Love is probably 2 then. I feel like I'm missing the name here. But even then, like, K-Love hasn't been super available as of late. But either way, in terms of pure passability, like, it's probably Jimmy, Love, and Jovic in some order to make the general point. And, like, the fact that Eric Spoelstra trusts Jovic this much, there is more usage for him during this stretch as Jimmy Butler isn't there. But it's been cool to kind of see him moved around the chessboard to this piece, see the volume perk up, holding up enough defensively to make that work. And him plus Khalil Ware has just been a revelation. Like, we were talking about the duo in our watch party over the weekend. Shout out our dear pal Crab, who kind of pointed me to, like, hey, have you seen like the on off numbers between with those two on the floor? And you look, and it's just like, this is like a double digit net rating in the positive side when those two are on the floor together. Like, you have the lob and roll gravity of Khalil Ware. We would like to see the screening continue to perk up. We would like to see the defensive discipline perk up, but this is a rookie big, so I'm not super concerned long term. But you want to see some of those things improve for him. But you just think about the theory of super athletic center who can provide some rim protection for you. Jovic, who's a better helper than he is an on-ball defender. So, like, you see the mesh between those two, and these are two very tall human beings. And then offensively, Khalil Ware has been an experimented three-point shot, but you're talking more about the lob threat that he is. Clean things up. And Jovic, as someone that can knock down shots and also can handle the ball, can also make all these passes, it's easy to envision how that can be positive moving forward. And so, like, that part's been exciting. And again, like, Jaime knocking down shots again, I think is pretty darn good for Miami. Again, he's been able to take more of that usage as Jimmy hasn't been there as well. And he's making the most of it right now. So, quick hat tip there. More in the this intrigues me portion of the program than impressed. But just keeping eyes on Minnesota and what's happening with Anthony Edwards, as this has been an interesting season for him. Obviously, the roster context has changed. Karl-Anthony Towns out, Julius Randle in, other pieces in and out as well. But like those, that's kind of like the biggest shift that you've seen in terms of the spacing, et cetera. And so quickly pulling up some numbers on the Anthony Edwards front. Offensively, 25 points, 46% on twos. That's a career low. Shooting over 42% from three. That's a career high for him. 6 boards, 4 assists and a steal. 0.98 points per possession on any trip featuring an Anthony Edwards drive this season. That is the second least efficient season of his career so far. of help present on roughly 87% of his drives, slightly below his season two number. That would be the highest of his career. So he is just seeing a whole lot of bodies. He is also getting blitzed into oblivion in pick and roll this year, roughly 17% of the time. That is the highest rate in the NBA among high volume pick and roll ball handlers this year. That's an easy thing to see when you put on the Wolves game. We're just putting two on Ant. Let's force the ball out of his hands. I'm sure at this point you have seen or heard the post-game interview when someone asked him about that. He's like, well, I don't really want to see all these doubles. Like, I don't really want to get rid of it. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to continue to do it. And to that point, he has passed more out of blitzes this year than he did last year. You want to talk about subtle improvement there. But, like, just watching him navigate that and just kind of peeping the decision-making when he does see either the full-out blitz or just someone creeping up to the level of the screen. When is he deciding to hit the slip? When is he deciding to hit just the one pass away and opening up an easier passing window, at least in theory? When Rudy Gobert is the guy, he doesn't often get that pass, but either way, like, that is there in theory. And then there are also the times where Ant just kind of waits out the big retreats. Now I can go one-on-one. And as he has been ridiculous on off the dribble threes, that's been an efficient source of offense for him. But, like, just kind of navigating his own decision-making tree from there and what it means for Minnesota's offense has just been something I've been keeping an eye on as of late.
Oh, so you mean the journey of a young guard who is now getting a response from the league as to, we don't want you to score. I mean, I think one of the things you have to remember, everyone wants to talk about spacing and context and Julius Randle and everything changes. This whole run was built on what Anthony Edwards did in the playoffs last year. His blend of shot-making and playmaking, and he nailed it. The tightrope, he nailed it. Whatever coverages you want to throw at him, he made the right plays. He scored enough to get you to defend him at a certain level. He made the plays to pass and beat teams over and over again, got you in rotation. It was all fun and games. Now, that's baked in. And now teams are anticipating, oh, you can do this. Mm-hmm. We're not going to let you do it. And now you are in a position where you have to do it every single time. You have to nail those every single time. And so I think for me, how much of it is pace and tempo? Can Minnesota continue to kind of find ways to move him around the board? We've seen in the past him be using different actions. Can you get to pass and cut? Can you get him some post-ups? Can you move him around so teams can't necessarily lock in on just high pick and roll or transition attacks or dribble handoffs? Can he understand the moments when he has to attack, when he has to on the ball, when he has to get off of it? Because, I mean, he's aggressive. There are plenty of times where you mention, hey, what's up with the drives? Okay, well, for him to drive in a pick and roll, he's going to have to take two dribbles, get the big back, and then take a third and commit to it all the way.
Yeah.
So if he's not getting a foul, like, it's not like he's going to get the free will drop space to just kind of manipulate and pull. Like, he's going to have to create some of those driving lanes. So how do you balance that? Because he's going to be aggressive. You know, I think a lot of times people looked at the quote that he had as, well, I don't want, no, it's scorers want to score. They would like to score and then also do the other stuff. They don't want to do the other stuff so they can score. That's just scorer's mentality in my mind. But I think that's part of it. I mean, Minnesota has to find a way to get their tempo up, get their pace up, execute better in the half court. Because the nights when Anthony Edwards is making shots, really hard to deal with. We've seen it time and time again this season. Oh, boy, we got to deal with him in pick and roll. Now they're moving and grooving. Defense feels good. We know what their formula is. I think for them, it's just consistently trying to find it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every guard goes through this moment. I think we forget that sometimes with how good the league is.
Yeah. That was definitely fair. Actually, I'll toss you a quick question, as Minnesota has obviously worked to try to open up the spacing a little bit more. I think they're now 3-1 since Dante DiVincenzo entered the starting lineup. Like, how have you felt about the starting group with Dante in place?
I mean, I think for me, it's just to get Dante going, in all honesty. I think with Mike, you know what Mike does. Mike can do what he does at any point in time when he comes in the game. I think Minnesota realizes you need probably another shooter out there in theory, but you also just need Dante DiVincenzo to play at a high level. When he plays well, that team feels better, and you can still kind of stagger and rotate. So I took it as trying to get him going more than anything else.
Understood. Like, I think Dante, like, a little bit more size from Mike Conley to help try to bolster up defense a little bit, though Mike Conley, I think, he's been solid defensively this year. Not necessarily a criticism of that. Just is a bigger body. I do think Dante just plays with a level of, there's a juice and, like, there's a randomness that he provides that I think Minnesota could use, particularly defensively. Like, he just jumps stuff all that in. Like, he's going to get into your jersey, but ultimately, like, he's going to be a little bit more aggressive, help Minnesota force a little bit more turnovers. And offensively, very willing screener, willing cutter on top of that, shooting off movement. I think you worry less about if he catches it, will he fire this? So wow. That may help. What's that mean?
Sneaky slander you got in there, bud. Keep going.
Sneaky slander. Not slander at all. I'm just saying, like, that level of aggressiveness, I think, is at least the theory behind. Let's see if we can jumpstart the starting unit a little bit more. And as you mentioned, like, Mike can just kind of be Mike in any lineup configuration.
No, I already said that. What else you got to say about Mike Conley? That's what I mean.
You know, consummate professional. He does what he's
okay,
supposed to
do. Okay, all right, man. What's next?
Unbelievable. All right, well, last thing I had, just giving a quick hat tip to Colin Sexton. As we safe space, I think it is fair to assume what Utah's goals are for this season. But within that,
there has been some pretty
they want to go out there and compete and want to put themselves in position for future success. Smile, thumbs up, sparkle, sparkle. Shout out, Utah. But anyway, Colin Sexton, over his last 13 games, 22 points, roughly 4 boards, 6 assists, and a steal, shooting 42% from 3, a little under 50% on twos. But what I've enjoyed, very much a micro skill, I just want to nerd out thing with Colin Sexton. Like, I've enjoyed some of the pick and roll setups for him. Like, I think the Colin Sexton story, even going back to the Cleveland days, is just, we know you are fast, we know you can score. How are you going to channel this to either do so more efficiently, or can you dial it back some, bolster the playmaking, and ultimately, like, help everyone that you're on the floor with? And so, like, that's just kind of been a journey for him throughout his NBA career. But the pacing has gotten better throughout his career, and that has continued to improve this season. But, like, just watching him set up some of his attacks, like, he doesn't have to go 90 miles per hour all the time. Let me call for the screen. Let me dribble a little bit to the left. Or let me act like I want to reject the screen, and now I'm just going to dart into the pick. You are now over it, and now I can kind of sneak and keep you on my hip, and now I can kind of lead the dance. And, like, he's just doing that a little bit more this year. He's taking more shots from floater range this year than he did last year. He has already attempted more floater range shots than he did last season in fewer games. It's at around 49% on those floater range shots this season. Short pull-ups, getting to actual floaters. We've spent a lot of time talking about floaters over the last couple of pods, so I'll leave it there. But just the interior craft for him has improved, and I really enjoy it. And I think if you are a good team looking to pry him out of there, like, that should give you a little bit more faith that he can kind of slot into this ecosystem. The three-point shot is certainly there. He can play off the ball. He can certainly create his own shot. And I think because of how he has improved in terms of the pacing, and not an elite playmaker at all, but someone that can make the basic reads for you. Like, I feel a little bit better about him working with different types of screening partners. So if this is, you know, score that can complete your starting unit, or someone we want to give a second unit to, I think he has the ability to just complement a lot of different players. So I think he's a name that I'm at least keeping an eye on as we get closer to the trade deadline. But I've just enjoyed what the Colin Sexton experience has been like as of late. And related to that, I did get a good cackle out of, like, hey, Mr. Collier, give me the ball, please. And Isaiah Collier's like, actually, I got it. And violation. And then more frustration. That is not what he had on the board.
You ruined my free throw, because that game ended with a Isaiah Collier turning the corner to finish into Colin Sexton swiping the ball away. Utah wins. Do you think they've talked since?
Surely there's a double tap in the group chat at somewhere. I think the existence has been acknowledged.
Okay,
but buddy, that was funny to watch in real time.
You know who didn't look like they were having fun? Will Hardy.
Yeah, understandably so. It's like, hey, let's get into something, and we can't get past half court because we don't know who's supposed to be freaking the ball up or how quickly we're gonna do so. Very funny moment in a close game, but Utah was able to pull it out either way. But quick shout out to Colin Sexton. So I will leave it there. Steve, anything that's caught your eye as of late?
I mean, I think it's overall, it's up and down time. You know what I mean? It's you never know what you're going to get basketball-wise. And so if you're starting to enjoy these teams, you're starting to understand which teams are coming, which teams are not. Think about this, right? The Knicks, They won 9 straight. And then they lost 4 out of 5. And then they faced Milwaukee, who had won 3 straight and beat them 140-106. You just look at the Eastern Conference standings and everyone's kind of jockeying in their own different way. Like the Knicks trying to creep up on Boston. And like, I don't have the energy to do, hey, is Boston okay? I think that this is normal up and down play to a degree. It's hard to defend a championship. Knicks are only, 2.5 games out of the 2 seed. But you know who's right behind the New York Knicks?
Ooh.
The Orlando Magic.
Who just got Paolo back and Buddy.
Who play defense. And if they don't play defense, they're going to play some more defense. And if they don't play defense, they're going to play some more defense. A 5-second violation against the Sixers late in the game. And now Paolo's back. And they're only 3.5 games out of the 3 seed. But guess what? You mentioned it. The Indiana Pacers right there. 4. And then right behind them, the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Miami Heat. And the Detroit Pistons are 20-19. I can say that right now. They play tonight, so I don't want to go too hard on that point, but it's been a while since they've been able to say that. They're 9-2 since December 21st, Nikias.
That's pretty darn good.
If you look at 2 of their last 3 wins, beat Toronto, 44 made field goals, 36 assists. Beat Brooklyn, 45 made field goals, 30 assists. Cade Cunningham in January, 25.1 points, 8.9 assists, 6.6 rebounds, 1.4 steals, shooting 50% from the field on 19 attempts, 45% from 3 on 5 attempts, 75% from the line. If he could make some free throws, we'd be talking 50-40-90, now wouldn't we?
Sure would.
The Pistons are 10-4 when they make 15 or more threes.
Seems good.
I'm going to give you a Steve stat. It's related to Tim Hardaway Jr. And so I'm going to get booed for the first one, but it's a setup. So okay. They're 12-5 when Tim Hardaway Jr. makes 2 or more threes in a game.
Boo!
They're 7-1 when he makes 3 or more.
Ah.
So keep an eye on the Pistons. Also, you know what else you need to keep an eye on?
Ooh.
The Denver Nuggets. So Nikias Earl Grey Duncan. I'm going to ask you a question, right?
Ooh. Oh, go ahead.
I didn't mean to put your government out there, but it's out there. You're fine. That's... Nuggets are the 4 seed.
Okay.
Game and a half behind Memphis. 12-7 at home, 11-8 on the road. Mm-hmm. If I had gone in a time machine and told you, hey, Nikias, a lineup of Aaron Gordon, DeAndre Jordan, Julian Strother, Peyton Watson, and Jamal Murray are going to lead a comeback in the 4th quarter, would you believe me?
Not even a little bit.
That's what they did. And so what I would say is the Nuggets starting to figure some things out. And this is where I understand the desire to write some teams off and say the ceiling is this, or they just need to do that. Give it a second. Let it cook. Let it marinate. You probably feel a lot better about the bulk of Denver's roster today than you did when you were upset. And Aaron Gordon just got back. Mm-hmm. So now you have a place where Christian Brown knows what he's supposed to do, who he can play with. Julian Strother, you may wish to be more consistent, but he knows what he's supposed to do. Peyton Watson, you throw them in there. Russell Westbrook has played very, very well. As Nikias would like to point out, he's played very well as a starter, but he's played very, very well during this stretch and has given them a different look. Jamal Murray's able to navigate and figure things out. And they still have Nikola Jokic. So I would just say keep an eye on the Nuggets. They're working their way through it. Dallas is fighting like heck without their top 2, so that's been fun. It's all over the place. And the Kings, again, do you know what DeMontis Sabonis did in Boston?
He ruined their nights is what he did in Boston.
what do you have, 23-28? And you said he wasn't an all-star?
Well, no, he was just a reserve for me.
You said he wasn't all-NBA?
I think he was all right. Let me go to the notes. Let me make sure. I don't want to talk outside of my neck, but I'm pretty sure I had Sabonis on my all NBA team as well.
You only had him there to avoid this moment.
Oh, what? No shot. You ain't have him as an all-star. I did. Oh, all NBA though. Oh, well, you only did it because
there's one list you didn't have him on, to be earnest. Cause you had Jalen Williams and LeBron James. So I don't know if you had Sabonis in, and if you did, it was barely. We'll roll back the tape. Don't worry about it. I'll find it.
It's crazy.
You know what? We're going to make this camera shake right now. They got transcripts, right? Yeah, I'll be right back. What you said.
That's right. I'm going to pull those notes too. But no, I think he was my Kings, bro, in all seriousness.
Nah, I'm just, but he's playing pretty well.
I have so many notes.
It's tough, man. It's tough. But that's kind of been the fun of the league for me right now. I'm enjoying that. And I don't want to take up too much more of your time, as I want to make sure you can deliver your deluxe defensive takes coming up.
The deluxe. Oh, brother. All right. Well, very quickly, All-Star returns. The second All-Star returns came out this past Thursday. Then we get another update this upcoming Thursday. So stay tuned for that. Your E starters still in the guard room, LaMelo Ball and Donovan Mitchell. In the front court is still Giannis, Jason Tatum, and Karl Anthony Towns. Donovan Mitchell with a 161,571 vote lead over Damian Lillard. So we will see what the Thursday results look like there. On the down ballot, I suppose, Tyrese Maxey passing Cade Cunningham for sixth among East guards, in which, with how well that Cade Cunningham is playing, as Steve beautifully laid out, that brother's been hooping. I think he deserves a little bit more shine for what he's doing, you know what I mean?
Hey, you ready to get mad?
Sure.
Same reason Jordan Poole is ahead of Darius Garland?
A triple
vote day and a TikTok will do a world of good for you.
God. I guess that'll do. Man.
Why do you think Tyler Hero's 10th?
I can't answer that. in the West, we have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander still holding a starting spot. But as Steve called, when we talked about the first returns, possibility that Stephen Curry would pass Luka Doncic as he's out. And sure enough, Stephen Curry has the second guard spot right now, a 25,160 vote lead over Luka. And the front court is still Nikola Jokic, Kevin Durant, and LeBron James. Worth noting, Wemby has passed Anthony Davis for fourth, and Wemby about 350,000 votes behind LeBron for third. So I don't know if he's going to close that gap. We'll see. But we did have some movement with fourth and fifth at the very least.
It's going to get interesting the more I think about it. Because LaMelo, if LaMelo stays clear number one, it gets really tricky, because his all-star vote is in the players and the media's hands. And one, I don't know which way the media is going to go this year. I don't know if there's an automatic stamp. Do they go Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell? Is there a split with Dame and Trae Young? Like, does anyone vote for LaMelo to that degree? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where do the players put LaMelo Ball? Because last year, if I have this correctly, they had him 7th. Which, in fact, could be enough if the media doesn't just tank him completely.
I love how Steve has been layering that. Hey, I don't know if they gonna vote for him like that.
I don't know. So it's gonna be interesting there. And then I think the front court East, you can wrap that up. There's nothing to talk about. We can talk about reserves. That's the fun there. The front court in the West also gets very tricky, because I imagine Nikola Jokic is going to command a lot of media votes, correct? Mm-hmm. Where is their split going to be, and what are the players going to do with Victor?
That's where I go ahead. But
Jokic, LeBron, and KD were 1, 2, 3 for the players and for the media. Wemby was 8th for the players, did not receive a media vote. Mm-hmm. Does Wemby end up in a split with AD? Do LeBron and KD split? Does Jokic ruin the party for everyone?
I mean, Jokic is just soundly in. I think the combination of... I guess I'll toss this to you. Do you feel like the media will be further... It sounds funny to say the media as a concept, but like in terms of the media vote, I think Jokic is just going to be one. Do you think two is more likely to go to Kevin Durant or LeBron?
For who?
For the media.
See, this is where it gets tricky.
Because, like, there is, like, Phoenix has just been, well, Phoenix also winning games now after their own lineup change. But, like, Phoenix has just been up and down this year. The Lakers have also been up and down, but they have just kind of consistently been in the top six at the very least. But, as I've kind of talked about, like, LeBron has still been great, but LeBron hasn't been LeBron. And like, I've had my own defense stuff with him this year.
Wait, are you sure he hasn't been LeBron? Because we just had a podcast where you listed his statistics over a stretch of basketball where he darn sure sounded like LeBron.
Yeah, I'm talking at large, brother. Like,
I did not say that's Nikias Earl Grey Duncan who said that.
How does this keep expanding? Anyway, Like, I do wonder, like, what the media vote's going to look like. Because there's also the world that's just like, LeBron is the best or second best player of all time. He is doing this at 40. This may be his last one. Get that brother in there. And if so, I think my hot, I guess hot-ish take, I think Wimby is going to finish third among media. I'm just trying to figure out who's going to finish second.
Probably the really good small forward.
Hey, you mean the multi-time champion? Or do you mean the MVP?
I'm talking about the one in the valley.
Ah. Well, gosh darn it. All right. Well,
also, and we do these segments, and it's mostly a buildup as I prepare Nikias for whatever he's going to get mad about here when this stuff actually comes out. Are you prepared for the world where Luka is not an all-star?
That he's not an all-star?
Or do you think he gets recognized by the coaches?
I guess more the former than the latter, I suppose. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the coaches are like, hey, we would at least want to name you this and then pick your replacement. I think they'd be fine. Because, like, Luka, when he's – like, Luka has been all-star good. He's been all-NBA good. But him missing this amount of time is just where it gets dicey. Again, when we first did our all-star exercise with, again, the obvious caveat that games played doesn't factor in a – like, it's not a rule for games played for the all-star stuff. But, like, Luka was one of the first people I mentioned. Like, hey, he hasn't played enough for this threshold for me. I don't think there's a bunch of me's out there that'll do that. And I don't know if the coaches are going to do that. But, like, I wouldn't be offended if he doesn't make it just because he's just been out. It's not a quality of talent or production when he's been on the court. It's just he's just been hurt.
I don't think there's a lot of me's out there. This man is spitting bars.
No, I'm just saying. Like, I don't think people are getting that granular with all-star voting.
That's true. Like, they're just vibing for real. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
This is in my free throws, but we'll sprinkle in it now for time's sake. Do you know how the rosters for these teams are going to be selected?
I sure don't, man. Because, like, traditionally, when it was just a two-team concept, it's just like, hey, top vote-getters, here's your captains. Cool. If we split this into teams of what? Teams of eight?
Yeah.
Is it the top three vote-getters? Like, that's, fine if so. But, like, I haven't seen the rule, so I genuinely don't know. But if it is the top three, then that is just what? Jokic, Giannis, and Tatum? And then the fourth team, right? Was this the Rising Stars team, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so is it just Jokic, Giannis, and Tatum? But I guess that would make the most sense if you're going to keep it that way and you're going to do the captain thing. And this is, again, me saying this without having seen, if it's out there, like how it's officially done.
Though the rosters for the three teams participating in an all-star mini tournament will be drafted by the hosts of TNT's Inside the NBA.
Oh. Okay, I did not know that.
Moving right along.
All right. Well, hey.
You want to talk about defense? You want to talk about news? What you want to do, bro?
Oh, goodness. Just quickly on the news front, more so W news than anything. It is like qualifying offer week in the W and official free agency tipping off very soon. So be on the lookout for that. But Satu Sabally and Kelsey Plum each getting the core designation, which for those who aren't familiar, essentially the franchise tag in the W. That does not mean that Satu Sabally is going to remain a Dallas Wing. That does not mean that Kelsey Plum will remain a Las Vegas Ace. In the case of Satu, we talked about that on the last pod. She is flat out said, like, she's taught the Dallas management. I played my last game in Dallas. We're going to work together to find a new home. So we will see where Satu Sabally ends up. The Kelsey Plum thing is a little bit more interesting. Because I would assume, like, not sourced or anything, that this would be at minimum, like, just a last hurrah with the core four. And then go into 2026 and we'll see what happens. As new CBA kicks in, more expansion teams, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, Annie Constable and a couple others, like, it feels like there's more smoke than I anticipated to Kelsey Plum gets the core and gets traded somewhere. So I'm curious to see how this shakes out. I guess is ultimately where I land right now.
Hey, Nikias.
Hi, Steve.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure you can.
Do you know what's happening on January 18th of this mighty fine year?
No, what's going on January 18th, Steve?
Kelsey Plum will get her jersey retired by the University of Washington. Speaking of Washington, do they house a WNBA team at all, by any chance?
The state of Washington, I believe so.
Any players that maybe decided they might not want to hang out there anymore?
Yeah, Mercedes Russell.
Are you ready for that trade? Goat.
Okay, in all seriousness, this is a Kelsey Plum Jewel Lloyd swap.
You ready for that?
Hey, listen, if we get the Asia Jewel meme, but complimentary, that gets very funny. I've been trying to parse through this one, honestly. Because I don't want to fall into the trap of like over-indexing on what the Jewel season was last year, but like Jewel just was not better than Kelsey last year. And so I can see the world where you add a little bit more size, feel a little bit better about the shot creation, especially if Jewel bounces back, feel a little bit better about the defense, though I will say like Kelsey defended her tail off and has defended her tail off the last couple of years. But I think like fully engaged versions of both, like I'll probably prioritize Jewel or I'll probably pick Jewel on that front. I can see where the Aces could get better with a swap. But there's also the world in which maybe the jumper doesn't bounce back to the degree we expect it to with Jewel. And if not, you know, Kelsey was getting unders just because they want to take away the drives. It might be an under for Jewel. Like, hey, we don't think you're going to make this, but we know you're going to take this. And like, what does that do for the Aces flow offensively? I don't know. Like, we're talking about all W talents at the end of the day. And like the Aces do still just employ Asia Wilson. So like, even if there is a dip from Kelsey to Jewel, like Asia could just compensate for that because she's that freaking good. But like, it's a fit that I've spent a lot of time thinking about and will continue to spend time thinking about.
Okay. My job here was complete.
Okay, fair enough. Jewel can hoop, Kelsey can hoop. Those are two different types of guards, though. So, like, you know, it'd be interesting. It'll be interesting. All right, Steve, on the defense front, as I do the disclaimer, every time we talk about awards things and even all-star things, apparently, 65 games played is the bit. Naturally, we have not gotten to 65 games this season, but keeping up with the rate of that is roughly 79% of games. League average for games played is about 38 as of recording on Monday. The Monday night slate has not happened yet. So I guess through games played on Sunday, January 12th, league average about 38 games. So roughly 30 games played will put you on pace to reach that 65 game number. And also on the front, Steve, I owe you an apology. I think you asked me a little bit ago about like how many of these awards the games played minimum accounts for. Mm-hmm. I thought Sixth Man of the Year was also an award that fell under that umbrella. Sixth Man of the Year does not.
Thank you.
So for my own sake, I could just put DeAndre Hunter in my top three, as he was a guy that would have been in the top three for me, but because of games played, I didn't have him in. The awards that the 65 game played minimum, with some caveats, we can get into that a little bit later, time constraints, etc. But it's MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, All-NBA, Defensive Player of the Year, and Most Improved. Those are the awards that have the games played minimum. Sixth Man of the Year and the Rookie Awards do not. So just for future reference there. So my bad on the Sixth Man of the Year front. You end up doing your own thing anyway. But
sure did.
I did give you I gave you the wrong information. I do not want to do that. So there you go on that front. So for DPOY, Steve, who would be your top three right now?
Oh, you're just going to throw it to me?
I figure you're going to take less time than I will.
Just right to me? Just not even, dang, okay, all right.
No, actually, you know what, let me rewind.
No, I got it. Don't worry about it. We're here now. We are here now, and that's okay, pal. My number three player for Defensive Player of the Year is Evan Mobley.
Okay.
My number two, and this might get me booed, but it's fine, it's Dyson Daniels.
Oh.
As of right now.
Okay.
And my number one is going to be Victor Wembanyama.
Okay. I like it. That's the general question that I should have asked you before I asked you for your ballot, so my bad again. was going to be similar to the other awards we talked about. How have you felt about the vibe of this award? Or how many people were you considering before you got to your top three? What kind of race do you foresee it being this year?
The vibe of the award?
Yeah.
Well, I said it was going to be Victor last year.
That's
true. So the vibes are low for me, personally. But I like to enjoy and have fun with, like, the all defense, probably more fun than just straight up defensive player of the year. I think it gets tricky in a year like this where Victor's doing incredible things, but it's also like, hey, is that team really that good defensively? Am I overthinking it by going there? Who are the other contenders? For me, I think with what Dyson Daniels has done, maybe the Hawks aren't the best unit, and maybe people will take what Dyson Daniels has done statistically in 5 years, say, I can't believe he got a defensive player of the year nod or something like that. But the man has a ton of deflections on top of all these steals. Like, he is active beyond belief.
He's everywhere.
Doing things that we just haven't really seen as is Victor. I think three got interesting because Jaren Jackson Jr. is having an unbelievable season defensively. I think Evan Mobley and what he brings to the table for that team specifically, the amount of players and teams he has to guard, the weak side defense, that probably sealed it up for me. But Jaren's in the same boat, so I wouldn't really get that mad. I think this is probably a year where you're going to have to either lean on your subjectives or lean on your data, but just make your case because there's no clear cut. Hey, this is the best defender on the best team with the best numbers that we've had before. You know what I mean? Is there a Clippers rep? Is there a Wolves rep? You're going to have some of that taken away. So you're going to have to kind of dig a little bit deeper and think about the cases. Okay, who would the Boston rep be? How much credit do we give to Draymond Green and Bam Adebayo? What about the guards? What about Dylan Brooks? What about Lou Dort? What about Jalen Suggs? Do the Knicks have a rep? Do they each get in each other's way? Are they not good enough defensively as a team? Like, I think there's a lot of different concepts and ways you can get through it, but defense is subjective, and I think you have some loud seasons with some team success, and you also have some players that are doing it every single night that maybe deserve recognition. And so, you know, if someone wanted to push a Lou Dort defensive player of the year, probably listen to it, right?
Yeah, I'd give it a listen at the very least.
If the Bucks make a run and someone wants to push a Giannis defensive player of the year, you know? If the Suns had been better, KD might have got, you know what I mean? There are people where if levers are pulled, it can get interesting. I don't think it's a Rudy year this year. No disrespect. I don't think Brooks is doing a lot of good things. I don't think Brooks is going to get the credit this year. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it's a kind of funny year in that way too. A lot of the old standbys that you would probably just pencil in on these, like Jrue Holiday is still incredible to me. Derek White's still very good. I could see someone leaving the Boston Celtics off a list. So it's tricky. What say you?
A lot of good defensive seasons. Like, I think, you know, bouncing off of, you said Wimby last year, it is, I guess that's also been part of the fun for me with San Antonio actually having a losing stretch as of late, but ultimately being firmly in the play-in picture this year to where you're not going to be able to say, Wimby's just disqualified because the Spurs aren't even close to making the playoffs. Like, that argument being off the board makes this conversation more interesting. It may make it easier for some folks who might have felt Wimby's was the most destructive guy last year anyway, and now his team's in the play-in. All right, bam, submit vote in January. I don't think that part's fair, though Wimby, yep, full disclosure, like, you had him one on yours. I have him one right now. So, like, I'm not opposed to Wimby winning. But, like, to that point, it's a lot of interesting cases. Like, you don't have, to your point, the best guy on best team as easily, but, like, there are a lot of great defensive seasons happening on great teams and or great defenses to where, depending on what you prioritize, whether it is the box score stuff, whether it is the turnover create, you know, the event creation, whether it is the on-off impact, more advanced stats like EPM, et cetera, like, you can build a reasonable case for a whole lot of people. Like, you know who I feel bad about? He's pretty much my top honorable mention right now. I got to feel bad for Anthony Davis in this year's award. He, you know, it's only top three for the defensive player of the year ballot. I would literally have him fourth right now. And it's mostly, again, like, how good is the team going to be? that kind of leaves them out. Like, there are some numbers that are a little bit down from last year as well, if you want to get like super granular into the case. But ultimately, if a guy is averaging 9 defensive rebounds, over a steal, 2 blocks, top tier pick and roll defender, et cetera, like, that guy would just be an easy top 2 case, especially since the Lakers are currently a playoff team right now. But because the defense has been what it is, team-wide, and like, you don't have the same with AD on, the Lakers are this, but when he goes to the bench, they're like 9 points worse, et cetera. You can't build that case compared to other candidates. It gets kind of tough. Like, that doesn't necessarily take away from what AD's done this year. He's been great. But that kind of speaks to the strength of the class still. And this is with, you know, throughout the history of the podcast, how many times have we had Bam in our top 3 somewhere? Either in the exercise or once we get to the end of the season. Like, it feels like pretty much every year outside of like the Marcus Smart year. And that was only because of games played. And I don't know how many top 3 ballots Bam's going to be on as of January 13th recording.
I don't think I have Bam up there in the discussion as well. So he'd probably be 5.
Somewhere in the range. Theory,
5, 6, I guess, depending on how I shake it. Depending on the day, honestly, that's pretty up and down. But I don't think people understand how much Bam contributes to that Miami Heat defense and the ways that it changes what they ask him to do and what that looks like. And there's not enough loud things, and there are loud people this year. So it just kind of gets tough.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, this is a top 10 Miami defense again. And Bam dropping more, but when he does, I guess the thing that's kind of not Bam for me, at least statistically this year, has just been the switch numbers for him haven't been great, at least looking at some of the second spectrum stuff. And so, like, a part of the case for Bam is just that overall versatility. And him being very good in a drop is obviously helpful. If he's not switching as much, and when he does, like, the points per possession number is just high, like, that gets a bit difficult. Yeah, so, like, I just kind of, I feel for, like, a Bam this year. And, again, we have plenty of season left. The Heat could be absurd for the next 2 months defensively, with or without Jimmy Butler, and we get the Bam momentum. Like, that wouldn't shock me at all. And if the Spurs do actually fall out of playoff contention, like, as of right now, per Clean the Glass, the Spurs are 13th in defense. So outside of top 10, they defend at a top 5 level with Wimby on the floor, which I think is going to drive a big part of his case. It certainly does for me. But I don't know what voters are going to do with that front, because the Spurs defended like a top 3 rate last year with Wimby on the floor. And a lot of them pointed to the Spurs were bad overall, and the Spurs finished like 20th or whatever it was in defense, even though, again, with Wimby on the floor, they defended at elite level. So, like, if enough voters don't do that kind of splitting, that opens the door for, you know, if Bam has a surge. To your point, if Giannis has a surge, if the Lakers get on track defensively in particular, and AD just continues his production this year, like, AD could have a surge. The Cavs have 2 candidates, I feel like. I lean towards Mobley, but either way, it could get a lot of fun. But either way, my top 3 so far this year, Evan Mobley 3rd, 6.8 defensive rebounds, 1 steal, 1.4 blocks. If you care about defensive EPM, he's 7th among qualified players, 16th in defensive field goal percentage allowed at the rim, around 58% there, just outside the top 20 in pick and roll D, but that is a pretty large sample. And what's impressive to me, something that we've talked about on the pod a lot, they have asked Evan Mobley to switch a ton this year, and certainly a lot more than he did last year, and the switch numbers are good for him. And so that kind of versatility helping to spearhead this elite defensive group for Cleveland has him up there for me right now. Number 2, I do have Jaren. Not going to grab many boards for you, but 1.5 steals, 1.7 blocks. That block number is 6th in the league among qualified players. He is one of 4 players in the NBA as of recording, averaging at least 1.5 steals and a block. And he is the only player in the NBA averaging at least 1.5 steals and 1.5 blocks. In terms of high volume pick and roll defenders, he is 4th in pick and roll defense. He is 5th in defensive field goal percentage at the rim. The Grizzlies with a 107.5 defensive rating with him on the floor, which is that's pretty darn good. And the Memphis Grizzlies are an elite defense overall. Anyway, I've enjoyed the Jaren experience this year. There are still foul things that perk up from time to time. That is going to hurt him in a year where Victor Wembanyama exists. But I do think he has defended at a DPOY level this year. It's just been an underrated season for Jaren overall. Like, we've talked about him, but just at large, the intersection of the shot creation, the shooting, And the defense is not normal for bigs generally. So, like, he's been very good. Wanted to highlight him there. And then number one is Victor Wembanyama. 8.9 defensive rebounds. That's sixth in the league among qualified candidates. One steal, four blocks, which obviously leads the league. He is first in field goal percentage allowed at the rim. He is second in defensive EPM. He is fifth in pick and roll defense. The Spurs, as I just mentioned, 13th in defensive rating per clean the glass. They defend at a top five level with Wemby on the floor. He's been absurd. He changes the dimensions of the court. Challenges so many shots, blocks so many shots. He pretty much forces a ball handler to say, actually, I'm not taking this at all when he's on the floor as well. A lot of dribble around. Let's do something else with Wemby as well. He is in the lead for me for Defensive Player of the Year. Do we want to get into honorable mentions? As we've named a few throughout the conversation so far. But
sure. Actually, I mean, sure. Go ahead. I kind of feel like the teams might do that part for us, but
yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, actually, never mind, because we're about to get to the all defense portion. Would you like for me to go first this
time? No. Let me please get out of the way on this one.
Okay.
My first team all defense is Victor Wembanyama, Dyson Daniels, Evan Mobley, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Lu Dort is my first team. Okay. My second team is Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, Dylan Brooks, Jalen Suggs, and you guessed it, Drew Holiday.
I like it. Okay, good group. For me, my first team, I have Victor Wembanyama, I have Jaren Jackson Jr., I have Evan Mobley, I have Anthony Davis, I have Dyson Daniels rounding out my first team. Mm-hmm. First in steals, third in isolation defense, quality pick and roll numbers defensively. A positive defensive EPM if you care about that kind of thing. So second for me, I guess, is where it gets fun for folks. Jalen Suggs also on my second team. I have Giannis on my second team for now. I have Jalen Williams from OKC on my team right now. I've talked a lot about his versatility on this podcast. First in isolation defense, second in pick and roll defense. Not a high volume rim protector, but he has had to defend a lot of bigs. He's quietly sixth in defensive field goal percentage allowed at the rim. Among qualified candidates right now, he is first in defensive EPM. And as I have said, what feels like 57 times at this point, this season of the podcast, centers go down. He has to guard up as much as he did. The way that he held up was super impressive to me. So Jalen Williams getting an all defense nod for me right now. Bam Adebayo on my team. And the final guy to give Houston a rep had to double check to make sure that the minutes work, because it is 65 games played minimum, but it's also in order for a game to count towards the 65 thing, it has to be 20 plus minutes. I had to do the game log check. That's the thing that kind of eliminated like Isaiah Hartenstein and stuff last year. Anyway, I have Amen Thompson on my second team all defense right now. He has already shown himself to be one of the best perimeter defenders in basketball this year. And even going through some of the numbers outside the matchup stuff, because he's taken on the battles with Shea has been really fun. He's taken on a lot of high level assignments, but 0.9 points per possession against drives, 0.91 points per possession against pick and rolls, which is one of the best figures in the league. 0.78 points per possession against isolations. He's right there with Jalen Williams in terms of field goal percentage allowed at the rim. He's averaging over a steal and a block per game. So if you care about the box score stuff on top of that, he has it there. It's kind of tough to parse through like him versus Dylan Brooks versus when we had the mailbag question about potential all defense candidates for Houston. Like Fred VanVleet was another guy that I mentioned. He's an honorable mention for me, as is Dylan Brooks. Would not be upset with anyone having Dylan over Amen Thompson. But the combination of the event creation, what he's doing against different play types, different types of assignments he's taken on, he's been kind of nuts. So Amen rounds it out for me for right now. And as we get into honorable mentions, you have mentioned Drew Holiday and Derek White. Both of those guys are on my list. Just said Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet. Gerald Allen is a guy that I have. Lu Dort's a guy that I have. OG Anunoby is a guy that I have. And when we planned to do all defense stuff a couple of weeks ago, OG was on my second team. So he hasn't fallen off that far. Would not be surprised the next time we do this, he's just back on. He has been very good. Steve and I were talking pre-show. He mentioned what Josh Hart has been doing. I think Josh Hart has also had a very good defensive season. PJ Washington is a guy that I have on the list. Like further down, like there was a graphic that came, I can't remember who tweeted it. I want to cite it correctly. So maybe I'll come back on the Thursday pod to make sure I have the actual tweet to reference. But some of the on-off differential, top on-off differential guys in the league, was posted on the graphic. Naturally, Giannis was there. Shea was there. You know who else was on that list? Jalen Johnson for the Atlanta Hawks. I think he's probably a tier and a half below, like legit all defense level. But the defense does just look incredibly different when he's not on the floor. And like when we got that mailbag question about Atlanta recently, like I made the point, Atlanta has more wings, has more playable wings, and DeAndre Hunter's been very good. I think Richard Shea's going to be good, et cetera. They don't really have a lot of like 6'9 dudes that can fly down at the rim with their aggressive coverage and pick and roll, or guys that can affect things at the point of attack quite like Jalen Johnson can. So like in terms of the irreplaceability of it all, like he at least deserves to have his name mentioned. But again, I wouldn't argue top 10 defender Jalen Johnson yet. But he's a guy to at least give brief mention to. He would be on like the medium to long list if we're going back to last year's bit with the pod. But he's a guy that I thought about going back to Boston. I think Jason Tatum's had a really good defensive season. Like, I don't think he's going to quite reach all defense levels as we are with the MVP candidates. OKC just has a lot of guys that you can at least shout out. Like, Chet, if he stayed healthy, would just be on the first team. He'd be fighting for defense player of the year, I feel like, if he kept up his current level. But he's just out. Alex Caruso, one of the best defenders in the league, but OKC hasn't really had him this year. Cason Wallace, if we're just talking about the volume of, like, ball screens he's had to defend. Teams identify him within the starting lineup as, okay, you're not a bad defender, but at the very least, you're the smallest dude on the court right now, so let's just go after you. And he has held up incredibly well this year. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is another guy that has been put in action quite a bit, who has held up pretty darn well. So I want to at least say his name, but again, not going to make the top 10 case for him, but has had a good defensive season. Honestly, I think I will keep it there for now.
All right.
Oh, actually, wait, I got one more name I want to shout out. Because you mentioned the Clippers thing. So I guess technically two names. Chris Dunn would fall victim right now of the you have played enough games, but you haven't logged enough games over 20 minutes to qualify type thing. But he's been absurd at the point of attack. And Ivica Zubac continues to be one of the best rim protectors in basketball that nobody really talks about like that. And that should shift. He is incredibly good, an anchor of LA's defense. So I think I will end it there.
All right, let me cross-reference my list of names, see if I missed any that I thought Nekias would say. You did sneak Chris Dunn in there. That was going to be the first one I mentioned. Also got Cason Wallace in there. That was the first ballot one for me. Tumani Kamara, I thought, would get a shout in this segment. Who else do I think would get a shout in this? Jaylen Brown, PJ Washington, Fred Van Vliet, I believe I thought would get a shout in this one. I thought you would mention
quickly race by.
Hold on. Okay. I thought you might have mentioned your former rookie of the year pick, Yves Missy. I thought you would have said something about Jonathan Isaac. And then I personally am definitely surprised that you did not mention Isaiah Stewart. 46%. That's the shooting percentage by opponents against Isaiah Stewart at the rim, which is the lowest rate in the NBA.
Let me crawl the one. What I was going to raise my hand on was I did indeed mention PJ Washington and Fred Van Vliet.
Oh, God.
Tumani Kamara has been very good, so that's a good shout. Jonathan Isaac would also just fall victim. I think he just fall victim to minutes and games played, honestly. And I do want to check the Isaiah Stewart thing. We were talking about him a little bit before the show. Want to see where the minutes thing would land with him. But
surprised you didn't shout out Alex Saar. This you're gonna have a disgusting list in 10 weeks.
No. I could get to Alex Saar all defense, but he has been he's been rookie good, as has Eve Missy. Okay, but yeah, with Isaiah Stewart, he's played 35 games, he's averaging 20.9 minutes per game, only 3 starts. He has multiple games under the 20-minute threshold, and so he wouldn't qualify for it.
But what if he does?
Well, see, here's the thing. I think the bit would earnestly have to be like he had to be like plus 20 minutes. He just can't miss another game, I think would be the bit. Because this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Are you counting? 14, 14, 14. Get to the YouTube comments. Yeah. Goodness gracious.
That is us. That's 17 games under 20 minutes for him. So that's 18 eligible games right now. So it would just get kind of tough for Isaiah Stewart.
It was a joke.
My fault. I want to inform the listener / the viewer. My bad. We can get to the top YouTube comments. Hey, continue to leave your comments. We appreciate y'all for rocking with us. We got three I want to highlight in this segment. Compensate for the other week when, y'all just ain't leave a good one. But first one going to come from Brandon Smith, 4513 or 4513, however you want to say it. I truly appreciate how Nikias and Steve go back and forth with diverse opinions to make their point. It helps illustrate that there are different ways people consume and observe basketball, and that one person doesn't have to be right or wrong over the other in doing so.
I don't know. Only one of us just counted Isaiah Stewart DNPs.
Sounds like I'm right. Anyway, the second one going to come from Marcus Mayer, 9950 or 9950, whichever one, who asks, Steve, why doesn't efficiency matter? I get LaMelo isn't in a context that is conducive to being efficient, but I don't see why it doesn't matter as a concept.
I don't think I said it doesn't matter as a concept. I think I said it shouldn't be like the end all be all. We act like it's so normal. Efficiency matters. It's important. It's neat. It's cool. It's a good way to judge how well someone's doing something. I just don't think it should be used as such, like the separator it is in certain moments. Because I think you are now taking away someone else's context because, the efficiency is this, so gotta go. Like that it's harder. It's harder to do some of these things. Like we're normalizing something that isn't normal. Like efficiency isn't just the norm. Like you're supposed to, there's a reason why y'all always say league average. Because it's not normal to do these things. So you end up highlighting how not normal it is while also using it as a separator. And now it's like, okay, yeah, inefficient, but look what they had to do with XYZ. That's more of what I'm saying. It's not that efficiency doesn't matter. I was spent a year hearing about Paolo and inefficient. I'm just not sure. He had the playoffs he had. Then I watched Paolo come back and cook, get hurt. Then I watched Franz Wagner basically do what Paolo did. And everyone was like, oh. Look at the numbers, because Franz took like a couple more threes. And I was like, I don't like when y'all do this. Like, it's cool. You want to talk about efficiency? That's all right. But don't do this whole yin yang thing with efficiency where, I don't like that. I'm pushing back on it this year. Don't just throw efficiency at me. Tell me what that mean.
I think that's fair. I think that is more than fair. And our final comment going to come from Philip H616. Agree with Steve with the most improved player conversation and love Nikias, but no way that man is doing a 25-minute podcast. That man loves setting his points up like CP3 in the pick and roll. Also, free throws is just Steve teasing Nikias, and I'm here for it.
So salute to Philip and Nikias. I still can't believe you tried to get that off with a straight face that you could do a 25-minute podcast. Brother, you've spent the first 18 minutes of this podcast talking about Thomas Bryant and Nikola Jokic. And you mean to tell me you're going to trim all this down to 25? Okay, bud. All right. Sure, pal.
That's great.
Do you have any free throws?
No belief. Actually, I have exactly one free throw for you.
Okay.
Are you sending in a question to Skylar Diggins-Smith? Okay, fair enough. Steve, do you have free throws?
I have a question for you.
What's up?
Can you power rank the ball?
Pull up the old notes.
The out. Ball family and their respective glow ups this year.
And their respective glow ups this year?
You got LaMelo, the leading vote getter. You got Lonzo back on the court. You got LiAngelo. Whoa.
Okay. Well, then, in terms of glow ups, it's LiAngelo 1 with a gap. Number two would be glow up. Number two is probably LaMelo. Actually, no. I guess I go LiAngelo 1 with a gap. I go Lonzo as he's coming back from all of the health stuff. And so from that to quality role player is just a larger gap than LaMelo possibly making his second All-Star team. Even though obviously it's impressive and a little bit surprising, but impressive that he is the leading vote getter in the East. But like he's been an All-Star before. So I guess like the adversity bump for Lonzo and lesser degree LiAngelo, but that's probably where I go glow up.
Okay.
LiAngelo, Lonzo, then LaMelo.
Okay. Better woe, Cody Rhodes or LiAngelo?
I ain't gonna hold you, man. It might be LiAngelo, but while we're here, especially with him and Cody, while we're here, can I just get, I've said this to you before, but I haven't said this on the pod yet. The literal one thing that irks me about the reaction to the LiAngelo song is that it is now empowering people to spell woe incorrectly. And it is just hitting a certain portion of my brain. I don't like it.
If you just look, if you look it up, they'll just say you it's a different way to spell woe.
It's a different way to spell. It's not the original, you know, the H comes first. Like, that's all I'm saying.
So if someone tells you LOL and then they say LOLZ in the same 2 minutes, you mad at them?
Mad? No. But like, they're also probably not trying to pass that off as the correct spelling of, you know what I mean?
Mikas, I'm not going to lie. This seems like an island that you should not just be standing anywhere near. Just let it stay away from that hill. It doesn't seem like it's very fruitful there, bud.
Probably not. But, you know, you got to be yourself in these days, you know.
Strong MVP case. Karl Anthony Towns or Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Probably still Giannis. I had him ahead when we did the MVP exercise a couple weeks ago. I don't think I would flip Cat over Giannis, at least not right now.
Okay. Stronger coach of the year case, Doug Christie or Jamal Mosley?
It's Jamal Mosley, with all due respect to Doug Christie. And I know there technically isn't a games played requirement for coach of the year. If you've been the head coach for under 10 games, like, I can't put you past Jamal Mosley when he's just been there all year and the Magic have dealt with this amount of injuries and like they're just a playoff team and an elite defense anyway. Like, I can't do that.
Well, maybe you can't turn the bend that corner.
Whoa.
Hit the horns! Let's go!
All right. Well, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. We are on the YouTube channel every Tuesday. That is the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday. The Young Man of the Three channel, formerly the JJ Reddit YouTube channel. So if you want to see the live reaction, please spliced in Steve reacting to my award picks and things of that nature. We're here every Tuesday. Come rock with us. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve on Blue Sky as well at SteveJones20. Join our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link is in the description, whether you are watching on YouTube or listening on the audio side. If you have League Pass, create your profile. It's free to do so. Link your League Pass. Watch basketball with us. And not only will we be watching basketball, you'll get some video game stuff sprinkled in, some wrestling commentary. Obviously, we can't put football games on in the room, but we'll be talking some college football and some NFL as well as the playoff season is here.
But brother, you're just going to hear Nakai say advance and ready up. Man, wrap this up.
That's crazy. And, gosh. You know what? On that note, we will catch y'all later.
Ooh, got him.
Unbelievable.